Fellow Freedom fans, David Allen Carmichael, thank you for letting me get through my pet peeve today. My pet peeve. Yes, I was singing the blues is what it was. Okay, it was my pet peeve. I've just been watching it disgust me. And it just ticks me off when people will claim, well, we've got to obey the law. The IRS says blah, blah. And then you pull out the law and they well, don't show me. I don't need to read that. Why not? Obey the law. Quit giving lip service. People give lip service to Jesus, lip service to patriotism, lip service to obeying the law. And it's a worship issue is what it is. Okay? You know, if you disagree, of course, you can give me a call, 888-850-1872. You can do that. Now, I'm going to read something. I had some articles I wanted to read about some banking and AIG and fraud and all this kind of stuff. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go to a case that a lot of Christians are up in arms over, Bernie versus Flores. It was a case in Texas in 1997 where after the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, 42 U.S.C. 2000 BB, was passed. That's where it's encoded in the United States Code. It's in the Health and Welfare Code. I like that, Health and Welfare Code. Same place at Section 666 of the Welfare Code's listed. But the RFRA was claimed, quote-unquote, unconstitutional. Well, actually, it wasn't claimed unconstitutional. What it was claimed was Congress has no authority to actively impose upon states, and by the words that they used in this decision, or even on the people within the state, any deliberate plenary, you know, authority to control their lives. Let me read from Bernie versus Flores, and I'll tell you, this is really good stuff. It was really well done. I encourage you to read Bernie versus Flores, but look what the it says the remedial and preventive nature, Congress enforcement powers, talking about the 14th Amendment, and the limitation inherent in power were confirmed in our earliest cases on the 14th Amendment. Now, they're using civil rights cases as an example to explain the limit that the Constitution puts upon Congress. And I want you to think in the context even of this new health and welfare scheme that's coming out to find a funding stream to support their habits. In the civil rights cases, the court invalidated sections of the Civil Rights Act of 1875, which prescribed criminal penalties for denying to any person the full enjoyment of public accommodations and conveyances on the grounds that it exceeded Congress' power by seeking to, listen, to regulate private conduct. It exceeded Congress' power by seeking to regulate private conduct. The U.S. Constitution has no authority to regulate private conduct. Direct taxes on the states is not regulating private conduct. The U.S. Constitution mentions the people, the United States, and the states. If it said direct taxes on the people, maybe they could direct laws against private conduct. There's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that indicates they can control private conduct but for certain imposts and excises. An excise is something that you opt into voluntarily, and then because you opted into it, then of course they can prescribe your private conduct because it's not private anymore. It denied any person full enjoyment, public accommodations, etc. They found that to be a violation of the Constitution. The Enforcement Clause, the court said, did not authorize Congress to pass general legislation upon the rights of the citizen. No authority to direct the law to you, a people in Florida, but corrective legislation, that is, such as may be necessary and proper for counteracting such laws as the states may adopt or enforce, and which by the amendment they are prohibited from making or enforcing. In other words, if the state, the civil rights statutes gave the power of the state to be sued, and not the state, since they really had no enforcement over the state government, the state can do no wrong. If the state is operating according to law, it can't be sued. and the state can only is an entity of law, so it can't violate the law. The only person that can violate the law is a natural person. That might be an officer who's obligated by oath to fulfill the Constitution. So the civil rights statutes give the authority to have jurisdiction with acts within a state from a person in the under the color of law who violates your constitutional rights. Then the person, the natural person, is sued because since they were violating the Constitution, they could not be operating in their office, only under the color of an office. Heavy stuff. I may go on and quote from Bernie versus Flores. The power to legislate generally upon, listen, life, liberty, and property, as opposed to the power to provide modes of redress, you know, ability to sue somebody. So the power to legislate generally upon life, liberty, and property against offensive state action was repugnant to the Constitution. The power to legislate generally upon life, liberty, and property was repugnant to the Constitution. If they can't impose plenary, they weren't given plenary power to direct you what to do in your life in Florida. Of course, they were not given any authority to have plenary power over the operations of the Church of Jesus Christ or anything that is indeed an act of religion. God has an authority, folks, and we have to preserve it. There is no liberty without authority, and of course also there's no liberty without virtue. That's something to think about. Okay, my number here is 888-850-1872. If I've struck a chord, certainly give me a call, but I'm going to go on to some articles here I found in Reuters about AIG being sued. Now, I want to talk about this, AIG and their behaviors. Reuters reported this. Go to Reuters, reuters.com. It's good stuff. American International Group, AIG, agreed to pay $725 million to settle long-running securities, listen to this word, fraud lawsuit led by three Ohio public pension funds. It involved allegations that AIG engaged in accounting fraud. Now, AIG is a piece of paper. It's a corporation. It's an artificial entity. AIG cannot behave in fraud, can they? But AIG as an entity can be sued if somebody within their organization who operates in the name of AIG violates the law. So it involved allegations that AIG engaged in accounting fraud, bid rigging, listen to this, bid rigging, and stock price manipulation. Conspiracy theory. Conspiracy that AIG is doing stock price manipulation. The settlement resolves allegations of AIG's wide-ranging fraud from October 1999 to April 2005, brings the expected recovery for AIG shareholders to about $1 billion. People had a lot of losses because there were some corrupt, highly paid. You see, they didn't take profits and pass it to the stockholders because there were profits for a certain period, but there was a lot of losses coming. You can't pass a bunch of dividends when you're losing money. But you know what you can do is you can go ahead and pay your corporate executives billions of dollars in pay and bonuses in spite of their fraudulent activities. Now, AIG has no power to commit fraud. Officers of AIG have to be behaving fraudulently. So those guys got paid lots of money in spite of the losses to those who fronted the money, the stockholders. The class action suit was led by Ohio Public Employees Retirement System, the State Teachers Retirement System of Ohio, and the Ohio Police and Fire Pension Fund. As part of the case, they announced a $72 million settlement with an insurance corp. Without going into great detail there. It comes a day after U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission reached a $550 million settlement in a case against Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated. So now I'm going to read the story about Goldman Sachs. Now, AIG was found in this civil lawsuit. They agreed to a settlement, so it was never tried. The facts were not determined, but they settled the lawsuit, not claiming, as far as I know, well, maybe AIG did admit to doing some wrong, but they're going to pay people money. The thing is, there were behaviors of people that were unlawful, that were criminal. Let's go to the Goldman story. This, again, by Reuters, reuters.com. It says this is the title of the story. First glance, a $550 million settlement looked like a victory for Goldman Sachs and a blow to the Securities and Exchange Commission and its ambitious charges against a Wall Street titan. And here I'm going to quote from a Harvey Pitt, former Republican chairman at the agency. They took on the biggest investment bank in the world, that's Securities and Exchange Commission. They charged it with fraud. They received a settlement in excess of $500 million. And a concession that Goldman omitted significant facts. They didn't commit fraud, I guess. They just merely omitted significant facts. Now, of course, if it's deliberate, then, of course, it could be fraud. Said Harvey Pitt, a former Republican chairman, it's a huge win for the SEC, he said. The civil deal makes it less likely the government will pursue a criminal case, some lawyers said. Now, that's reported by Reuters at Reuters.com. It's a departure from the usual practice that defendants settle without admitting or denying any substantive facts, and could signal a very ominous trend if it becomes more common in the future, said Russell Ryan, former assistant enforcement director at the SEC and now partner at law firm King and Spalding. Now, the whole point of this Goldman Sachs thing is they were telling people about their stocks that they had enough information to know that the bottom was about to fall out. And what they were, I guess it was some kind of hedge fund thing. Here, hedge your bet by buying this. The problem was both of those things they were selling desperately needed a hedge because the bottom was going to fall out on all of it. So they were playing, and basically they're making money off the brokering. It didn't matter whether the client wins or loses. And they had enough information to know that there was going to be a major loss to the client. Now, what they did is, I guess they just admitted, it's the same thing like, well, we admitted certain facts. It preserves their story. This is what Donald Langefort, former SEC official, said. It preserves their story that it was just a mistake. But in no way is it implicitly conceding that it is fraud. Now, remember, Goldman Sachs cannot commit a crime. Goldman Sachs is a paper artificial entity. Human beings commit the crimes. So it's interesting that they're basically paying up, they're taking money. Whose money? Probably current investors to pay off the old investors. I guess that's what a Ponzi scheme does, right? Takes money from the most recent person to pay off the money they promised the person in the past. Eventually, the whole bottom falls out and the house of cards crumbles. The reason I'm bringing up all this kind of stuff is there is great, let's just say this whole thing with the financial meltdown and stuff, there was a lot of corruption. In fact, I listened to Barney Frank just 2 days ago talk about the crisis that happened in September in 2008. Well, I was on the radio long before that. In fact, I think 6 or 7 months before that, explaining that we were in a global meltdown. And I was asking bankers about the global meltdown. How come I'm the only guy who noticed we're in a global meltdown? The last quarter of 2007, if you go to the IMF newsletters, the International Monetary Fund, they were reporting in January of 2008, past tense, of the global financial crisis. Well, how come Barney Frank didn't know about it in the last quarter of 2007? He's admitted just in his public interview just recently that he thought everything happened in 2008. The sky is falling. The sky is falling. We need to take control of industries now or the sky will fall. Boy, folks, financial tsunami warning. It's coming your way. Stay tuned. Call in 888-850-1872.